While pilgrims might seem like an artifact from the Middle Ages, modern-day pilgrims of all stripes still light candles in holy places. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. Today on Travel with Rick Steves, we're looking at two of Europe's top destinations for people including a spiritual dimension in their travels.
There's a saint in Italy almost in every town.
Colleen Heater will join us in a moment to explore pilgrim sites and shrines in Italy. And we'll check in with Roberto Becchi in Siena to find out why he's excited about efforts to restore more of the ancient pilgrim trail from England to Rome.
Yeah, we should meet in the roads and not pass each other like we do today.
We'll also meet an unlikely pilgrim from Germany, comic Hape Kerkeling, who spent a month walking across Spain on the Camino de Santiago.
Well, what makes the way so interesting is that it's not a normal walk, so you won't encounter normal tourists, but pilgrims. And they're searching for something.
A pilgrim's inspiration in Italy and Spain. It's just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves. Modern-day pilgrims are traveling to find inspiration from ancient sites and religious shrines. Today on Travel with Rick Steves, we'll hear from a German who took a month off from being a comedian in Germany to hike the increasingly popular pilgrim route from France all the way to Santiago de Compostela in Spain. Let's start with Colleen Heater. She and her husband have traveled to dozens of religious pilgrim sites in Italy to learn the story behind them and to find their own inspiration. Colleen joins us from her hometown of Nevada City, California. Colleen, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, it must be interesting for you when you're traveling to see life-changing kind of places, places just bursting with wisdom, and watching people skirt right by them without hardly noticing.
And that's one reason why we wrote the books also, is we saw a lot of people who are religious tourists and not necessarily pilgrims, where they just come and see the sites and take pictures and leave, and they don't really take advantage of the power of the place.
Now, you and your husband, James, were longtime yoga teachers, and back in 1988, you got married, went on a honeymoon to Italy, and the trip sort of morphed into a pilgrimage Italy trip. Did you set out to lace together all the pilgrimage sites, or how did that happen?
Well, while we were researching the pilgrimage to Italy, we realized there weren't many guides for people who wanted to plan their own pilgrimages. And so we decided, well, let's just take the information and see if we create a book. And we went back another time and visited 35 shrines in Italy, and we created the first Pilgrims Italy, and then we followed it up with the Pilgrims France.
And you're working on books to India and Spain as we speak.
Right. A more personal book is we're doing Yogananda's India. We're basically following in the footsteps of Paramahansa Yogananda in India, and then we will do the Pilgrim Spain.
Now, what is the practical value of, let's take your guidebook of Pilgrims Italy. What's the practical value of this book to the non-pilgrim traveler? I mean, why should somebody even take this kind of travel seriously?
Well, if somebody is spiritually inclined, they might be traveling to some location in Italy or France and look up what saints might be there, what spiritual sites. We have how to meditate with the saints in the back to go a little deeper in the experience of the site, and they could just try it out on their regular travels instead of just a strict pilgrimage. So there's many ways to do it.
So you write in your book, while on pilgrimage, saints become not just our destination, but our guides. If you're quiet and calm enough, you can meditate not on the saints, but with the saints. Their very thoughts and inspiration becomes our own.
Yeah, and that's why we recommend practicing before you go, so that it's very hard in some, especially in Italy, the shrines can be very noisy, and Italians have a hard time not talking. And even the signs of silencio, the Italians, it doesn't seem to apply to them. So it can be a very noisy experience in some of these shrines.
I noticed in your book, Colleen, you even list a place for quiet and meditation in each site so you can get away from the hubbub.
And even in St. Peter's, in Rome, which is a huge basilica, there's a wonderful side chapel that enforces silence. And you can go in there and pray after you've visited all the sites in St. Peter's. So practically every basilica and church and sacred site has a quiet place to meditate.
Well, it's quite easy to go there as a tourist and think, there's nothing going on here. It's just a bunch of noisy tour groups looking for postcards and photographs and marveling at the statues. And at the same time, there's a parallel world, and it might be low-key, it might be fragile, or it might be more robust, but there's a parallel world of people who are there, locals and travelers as well, who came there to worship, because to them that's an important spot.
Right, and actually as a tourist, you need to remember that when you're visiting these ancient basilicas for the art and the history, that you really want to be aware that people are praying there, and the local people do use it as a sacred place to meditate and pray. And usually, sometimes you have to be brave and look around the basilica and find other places that you can visit or ask about them. Are there quiet places to meditate? And sometimes there's beautiful gardens that you can go to and meditate, and sometimes there's rooms that the saint might have lived in.
You know, I find that people who work at churches are sometimes, it's easy to think that they're rude to tourists, but if you're there to worship, they're there to help you, and they will find a way for you to get the peace and quiet you need, and so on. Now, you've been all over Italy, meditating on the message of these saints and so on. I mean, it's like the saints become your guides, and their very thoughts and inspiration become your own. Do the saints actually have a different personality that you get into when you're in this or that saint's town?
Well, that's why I love reading about the saints, because they're as varied in their personalities as we all are. And you can usually find a saint that you relate to. They've come from all different backgrounds, from rich and poor. Some of them are really intelligent and some of them aren't so intelligent, but they all have a love for God and live their lives for God. And that's the common ground between them all. But some of them have very interesting stories and have, you know, not always been holy from birth. They've lived worldly lives and then became a saint along the way. So you can find inspiration from almost any saint. Someone can.
I remember reading in your book that your basic appreciation of this started in Assisi. There's something about Assisi, the home of St. Francis, that it just emanates spirituality. And I've seen people who are not spiritual at all get caught up in it when they're in Assisi. What is it about Assisi?
Well, St. Francis lived there, and St. Clair, and there's many locations that pertain to them. And it's a wonderful little walled city that, even just for the general tourist, it's a beautiful place to go. But for the spiritual tourist, there are so many locations that you can really commune with St. Francis and St. Clair. And I'll give you an example. In San Damiano, which is where Christ first talked to St. Francis and said, "Rebuild my church," it's about a mile outside of Assisi. And I was praying in the little chapel there to St. Francis and to St. Clair. And it was a very moving experience for me, because I actually felt their purity. Sometimes there's no words for these experiences, but it was very profound.
Now, St. Francis is a little more accessible to a lot of people who are not experts at connecting with saints. Wasn't Francis and his gang known as jugglers of God or something like that? They were just the merry preachers.
Yeah, I think St. Francis is depicted as being pretty austere sometimes, but I think he did have a joyful spirit, and that came from his communion with God, his love for God. And I always like to find images of St. Francis where he's smiling. They're usually, he's very serious, and I perceive him as a very joyful spirit.
Now, I think it's pretty routine to appreciate St. Francis. You've done a lot of traveling. Tell us about a personal experience you've had with a saint that was surprisingly meaningful to you, and you just stumbled on it because you were traveling and open to this.
So many places are a surprise, actually. And St. Clair of Montefalco, which is outside of Assisi also, we drove there one time, and we had really strong cappuccinos before we left, and we got there, and we literally couldn't meditate. We were buzzing so much. And so we came back at another time, and we felt very spiritually affected by the place. And then a nun came out and told us that, did we want to see this other room where she lived? And we went in there, and it was a very special. These are the kind of things we mention in our books that you wouldn't know unless you hung out in the shrine long enough and talked to people and found out about it. And we wouldn't have known if she didn't motion for us to go to this other room. And it was a very moving experience, very special, and I could really feel the saint's presence there.
Wow. And that's interesting that Italy is so popular for its coffee. If you're going to be meditating, something you've learned from the School of Knox is don't drink coffee before you're going to meditate, huh?
Well, I wouldn't recommend it. Some people say it doesn't bother them, but I think this was the strongest cappuccino we've ever had. So it was pretty powerful.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Colleen Heater, who's written a book called The Pilgrim's Italy. And Colleen also has a book out called The Pilgrim's France. Colleen, when you're in Italy, you run across a lot of people crazy about this Padre Pio. In fact, now he's San Pio, right?
Saint Pio, yeah.
Now, there's a modern-day saint.
Are you able to, in your pilgrim travels, connect with modern-day saints and find the same sort of meaning? I mean, he just lived in the last generation, the same sort of meaning that if you encountered St. Clare or St. Francis.
That's one reason I really like Padre Pio or St. Pio, is that he died in 1968. So there's actually people around who knew him. And a lot of times when you read these saints, a lot of it's legend. You don't know if it's really true or not. With St. Pio, he did most of his work in the confessional and working with people who came to confession. But he was a very holy saint. He had the stigmata for 58 years, and which is the wounds of Christ. And he would read people's souls when they came to confession with him. He called them his spiritual children. He attracts 5 to 7 million pilgrims way out there in San Giovanni Rotondo, which is at the heel of the boot. So it's kind of far to go, and yet he attracts more pilgrims than the Vatican does.
My goodness. Now, he actually lived just in the last generation, and he had the stigmata.
Yes.
Those are the marks of the crucifixion, holes in your hand and a wound on your side. And he physically had that, and that is a very rare sign somebody gains when they have a powerful love of Jesus. Is that right?
Right. And some of the saints, like St. Catherine of Siena, they were hidden, the stigmata.
Right.
And then other saints, they actually bleed, and you can see the wounds.
Fascinating. Colleen, for a lot of people who are not comfortable with saints and are not Catholic, there's this confusion of, are you worshiping the saint or are you letting the saint help you worship God? How do you straighten that out for people?
Well, like we said, the saints become your guides. They are role models for spiritual seekers. They're like what you're striving for in your spiritual life. And they're normal humans just like everybody else. And they have achieved a level of communion with God that you want to move towards. And so you're using them as your role models.
So from a practical point of view, they just did it real well, and we can learn about how they lived out their mortal lives, and we can be inspired by that.
Exactly.
So you can prepare for your trip by reading about these saints, or you can travel and sort of incorporate it into your ongoing travel style by focusing on the saints and their teachings when you sit right there in the town where they lived and worked.
And there's a saint in Italy almost in every town. So every town we went through, we would look and see if there was a saint there. And we found some discoveries, like on the Amalfi Coast, we just went there for vacation. But in Amalfi, there's St. Andrew's relics that are considered very holy. And also in Ravello, there was another saint there. So you can seek them out anywhere you travel in Italy.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Colleen Heater about A Pilgrim's Italy, and we'll be talking with our listeners in a moment, too. We've got lots more coming up on saints and pilgrimage travel in Europe. We're looking at religious-themed travel today on Travel with Rick Steves, where the 21st century meets centuries-old traditions in Europe. Colleen Heater and her husband James have written comprehensive guides to religious sites in Italy and France. We'll get back to Colleen in a moment. But right now, let's check in with one of my favorite tour guides in Tuscany, who's been working to restore the ancient pilgrim route across Italy. We have my friend Roberto Becchi on the line from Siena, and Roberto's a very helpful tour guide when I do my work in Siena and in that part of Italy. Roberto, welcome.
Hi.
How are you doing there?
Pretty good.
Hey, Roberto.
Hi, Colleen.
You know, when we're in Italy, Italy is called, what, the land of 1,000 bell towers or something like that, indicating that people are very proud of their region and I would imagine proud of their saints. Tell us a little bit about local pride for saints in Italy.
Well, obviously, I'm from Siena, for example, so my role model is St. Catherine of Siena. And you were talking before with Colleen about St. Francis. Both of those saints were, you know, really what we could call a regular people. The people feel, even if they are not, you know, religious people, even if they don't go to church every Sunday, these are two role models as people that, you know, were very poor. They were certainly no aristocrats. And, you know, they made their way to find spirituality, to find God, but also they were a role example for everybody else.
So St. Catherine's a big saint in Siena. You know about St. Catherine, and you use her as an inspiration or a role model.
Yes. For example, just to have a comparison with Seattle, there was a chief Seattle in America that said something very similar to what St. Catherine said, which is that the earth where we live is not heritage from our fathers. is a loan from our children. And she said that in the 14th century, so, you know, a very
prophetic
touching person.
Yeah, now, Robert, just between you and me here, how many times do you go to Mass in a year, would you estimate?
I go to Mass every two Sunday, but my wife is Presbyterian, so I go to a different church.
Oh, you go to a Presbyterian church in Siena?
Well, it's a Valdesian church.
Valdesian, that's like Methodist, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
A Protestant church.
Okay. I guess what I was getting at is a lot of Italians don't go to church that often, but they really are close to the saints.
Yes, as I was saying, as a role model.
You took me to a church, and one chapel was filled with motorcycle helmets.
Yes.
Tell me what that meant.
Basically, we call it voti. Sometimes, you know, you just do a wish in front of a saint or in a very special chapel, and you have somebody had an accident, and you want him to be saved, and so you pray, and at the end, if this person did not die from a motorcycle accident or whatever, you just leave it there, the miracle, in a way. Your intermission succeeded.
So you're thankful, and even if you aren't a devout church-going Catholic.
Yes, correct.
Hey, Roberto, you've been doing some study about the Francigena Road. Can you explain to us what's that?
Well, the Francigena Road is a beautiful road that goes from Canterbury in England to Rome. The first time that we hear about this road is in the year 994, when the Bishop Sigeric, in his way back from Rome to Canterbury after he was appointed as a bishop from the Pope.
Okay, you're talking about Canterbury, like Canterbury Tales.
Canterbury, England.
Right.
And in his way back, he wrote a journal, probably the first Rick Steves of the Middle Age, in a way. And thank God we still have this beautiful diary, in a way, where he explains all his journey with all the stops and all the places he saw in Europe at that time. And today, this road is another opportunity for us to connect with other cultures. And several cities and counties created a net with the signs, the directions, so you can come and walk again in the steps of Sigeric and visit Europe in that way.
I'm not versed in this, but there's the famous book Canterbury Tales, right?
Yes.
And this was all about telling the little anecdotes of being on the pilgrimage trail, hiking the Francigena Road from Canterbury all the way to Rome.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. So, Roberto, what century was the original Canterbury Tales?
The 10th century.
10th century. So more than 1,000 years ago. And this is inspiring people today to remember.
It is.
Wow.
It is, because today we are so used to travel fast, like we eat fast and we travel fast. And that is the real problem. We don't meet people when we do that. The Francigena Road is not just a spiritual, you know, stop that you can do, but is a way to meet other people.
So it's a slow down and smell the roses kind of travel.
Yeah, we should meet in the roads and not pass each other like we do today.
Colleen, that sounds like an interesting new angle on Pilgrims Italy.
Well, we have included the ancient pilgrimage routes in Italy in our revised edition, and these ancient pilgrimage routes are being revived all over Europe. And in France, they're reviving them, and they're also called cultural routes, where they're doing it for the history, for the wine. People want to get out and experience. They do want to get out of their cars and really experience the countryside, the people. It's a whole revival with these routes.
You know, perhaps the granddaddy of these roads is the Camino de Santiago, which goes from Paris to northwest Spain to Santiago de Compostela. And I'll never forget being on the square in Santiago and seeing these pilgrims come on after their weeks and weeks long hike, finally arrive on the square and look up at the Cathedral of Santiago and step on that scallop shell and look at the Cathedral of St. James. And they're just overcome by joy. And not all of them are like Christian pilgrims. A lot of them are just seekers. And they're out there, like Robert was talking about, to just slow down and connect with the world and connect with people. I think the very first guidebook ever written guided pilgrims through medieval Europe from Paris to Santiago de Compostela.
And they crisscross across all of Europe. And there's a new one also in Italy for the Rieti Valley, or the Sacred Valley. It's called the Camino di Francesco. And it's a 50-mile path that stops at 8 places related to St. Francis. And they have an excellent website. And it just started, I think, in 2003. So they're being revived everywhere.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Colleen Heater, who writes The Pilgrims, Italy, and Roberto Becchia, a friend and tour guide, is on the phone with us from Siena in Italy. And Tim's on the phone in Maui from Hawaii. Hi, Tim. Thanks for your call.
Hello there. We had been in Italy last fall, September-ish, and just in wandering around, we had wandered into the cathedral in Amalfi, and I didn't really know it, but in the tour, it's a one-way tour, and you end up going down a set of stairs into the crypt of St. Andrew. And I don't know how many people have actually heard of it or been there, but oh my, it is an incredible room filled with frescoes and columns and statues. And in the middle of it, there's the giant statue of St. Andrew up on an altar, and underneath it, of course, is the crypt. And it was one of those kind of places where there was maybe a dozen people in the room, and it just really hit me as I was just awestruck. And later on in the trip, we had gone into the Basilica at St. Peter and up in Venice, and they just didn't have that same impact because they were lots and lots of people, and so, I don't know, I just thought that was one of those kind of places.
And you have that X-shaped cross, right, that recalls how he was crucified.
Exactly.
Yeah, Colleen, I'm sure you've been to the Amalfi and the crypt.
Yeah, and that one we accidentally discovered also, and we put it in the book because we found it a powerful place also.
It's amazing to think that one of Christ's apostles would be nestled there in a little town of Amalfi, reminding us
it
that...
It was a surprise. Yeah.
Amalfi is a humble town today, but it was a maritime power 1,000 years ago, so it got its big-time relics.
He talks about Venice, and St. Mark's is really a museum at this point. You have to pay to get in, and then you have to pay again to see this rood screen behind St. Mark's crypt. And everybody's filing past his crypt, and there's no signage. You don't know if that's really St. Mark or not. And so we stopped, my husband and I, and actually closed our eyes and meditated on St. Mark and received an incredible blessing. And we realized that nobody really knows that St. Mark is there. It operates more as a museum now. So that was a surprise also.
In the Francigena Road, there are a lot of little churches which maybe don't have the fresco painted by the famous artists like in Amalfi or in Siena or in San Marco. But they are still very spiritual places. And there, for sure, you can find less tourists that, you know, disturb meditation.
That's a real key if you want to be quiet and focused, is to get away from the tourist traps. I mean, it must be very frustrating in the more famous churches to be just overrun by tour groups.
Correct.
All right. Hey, Tim, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
And we have Matt on the line in Renton, Washington. Matt, thanks for your call.
You bet. Well, I had a really amazing experience of enjoying the kindness of a stranger in Assisi a few years ago. My wife and I were taking a trip. It was a pretty well-planned trip to Italy, and Assisi was the centerpiece of the trip. And when we showed up at the Basilica of St. Francis to take an English-speaking tour, we discovered we were there on the wrong day for the English-speaking tour. Either we had read the schedule wrong or it had changed, who knows. And we were very disappointed because the next day we were leaving town before we could catch the next day's tour. And the woman who was working at the ticket counter called over a Franciscan friar who just happened to be walking through the lobby and explained our situation to him. And he said, well, I'll do it. No problem. So he was a friar from Denmark. He was there kind of on his own pilgrimage, but he spoke English very well. Theodore was his name. He took us on a very long tour of the Basilica, explained all the frescoes and such incredible, revealing, meaningful detail. My wife was actually in tears at one point just hearing his descriptions of the artwork and the stories that they told. And then afterward, we felt that we wanted to repay him somehow, so we invited him to come and have coffee with us and continue to talk. And he said that that St. Francis always taught that you should never turn down a gift, and so he was happy to join us, and we had an amazing conversation with him over coffee at a little cafe nearby.
You know, those Franciscan monks inject such a spirit of joy and happiness in Assisi. I think everybody who goes to Assisi who has a chance to connect with the monks has that experience. A lot of times, people who aren't comfortable with the Catholic tradition oftentimes find the monks a little bit off-putting, but every time I connect with those monks, I find they're just very welcoming and very helpful. You know, I was there filming our public television show, and we had to come at 7 o'clock in the morning before it opened to the public, and several of the brothers were waiting for us, and we got there, and it was a big, kind of a little stressful to bring our camera into this one of these greatest basilicas on earth and see if they're going to let us shoot what we want to shoot. And they stood very sternly before me, and they said, "We've read your books." And I thought, oh, no, because, you know, in my books I call relics like the ruby red slippers. I say they get you home. And I was talking about trying to be a little bit flip and fun about the Catholic heritage. They said, "We've read your books, and we like the way you teach St. Francis." And they let us in. And then they took us around. And we were so royally treated there. And it just was a beautiful experience to be able to bring the camera into the Basilica of St. Francis with those Franciscan monks.
Meeting the religious people is a really sweet way to travel, because we have found in France and Italy that they really are sweet and they add that to your travels.
They really do. And the key is for travelers to realize that it's not a tourism, are you going to pay admission, are you going to buy a postcard thing. These are monks. Their life's work is, and these are church people, their life's work is to keep this place of worship alive and vibrant. And they're thrilled you're there, especially if you're there thoughtfully and you want to be, to whatever degree, a pilgrim. Julie's on the phone in St. Paul, Minnesota. Julie, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Rick. I just want to say that the travels that I've had the opportunity to take with my church choir and then those experiences in actual churches, being able to sing informal concerts where we just walk in and set up and sing for 15 minutes or give a concert, have been the most rewarding experiences of our lives.
You hit something right on the nail there, Julie. I've done that with some of my groups where there's a large family that loves to sing, and they just grab the opportunity and they fill the place with music, and it just enlivens it, doesn't it?
It does, and the individuals that are, you know, also in that space at the time we're singing get a whole nother level of experience themselves without even expecting it or planning it.
Roberto in Siena, yes. Any thoughts on that? What if a group of music loving?
A few years ago, I organized a beautiful tour for the high school, Bethlehem High School in Pennsylvania. And we did the same thing that your listener was saying. We did concerts all over Italy. And we did it in beautiful churches, but also we did it in little tiny churches where the local people never heard an American choir, you know, singing. And it was a beautiful moment again. Because there was a meeting point there between the local people and those students. You know, everybody wins when that happens.
Everybody wins.
The real spirit of traveling is when you meet people.
I've been in humble churches in the middle of nowhere in Italy when a group of students who are part of a musical group from Poland or Slovenia come in. They sing, the tourists sit down, and the whole place is filled with joy.
Correct.
Colleen.
Yeah, I also want to say that not only the acoustics of these churches are wonderful for singing, but a lot of the sites themselves have been built over powerful energy centers. A lot of them, like Chartres and Sopra Minerva in Rome, have been built over ancient temples. So sometimes just the magnetic energy of the spot is very high, and then you have the saint that is contributing, and then all the pilgrims' prayers, it all adds to the power of the place.
We had the chance to sing in the Sistine Chapel just before opening for 15 minutes, and security guards came in and stood. We had our children there with us. It was a monumental moment, and we were able to then repeat that in a very small church in Corsica that we sang a joint choir concert with. Their community choir, and the church was packed. People were outside the church and then gave us a cheese and homemade wine celebration after, and it was magnificent.
Great way to connect. Hey, Julie, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. Roberto, thanks for joining us from Siena.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Ciao.
Ciao.
And Colleen Heater, thank you so much. We've been talking with Colleen Heater about her book, The Pilgrim's Italy. Boy, it just seems to me that travel, like life in general, it's a struggle to find a balance between our inner spiritual lives and the outer material ones. And seems like when you're traveling, whether you like it or not, you're going to bump into some saints, and it can add to your travel experience.
You might as well try it. It's also, pilgrimage is a thrifty way to travel, which everybody's concerned about money these days. And staying in monasteries and convents is low cost, and also the sacred sites are free admission. And so it's a wonderful way to stay in the vibration of the saints. And I want to mention two places as an example of that. La Verna in Tuscany, about 70 miles out of Assisi, St. Francis was gifted this small mountain for seclusion, and it's here that he received the stigmata. And you can actually stay inside this monastery, and it's a very powerful, special place. And also in France, in Nevers, St. Bernadette, the last 13 years of her life, she lived in this convent, and her reliquary is there. And you can stay in this place. It has about 200 rooms. It's very huge. Where in the day it's very busy in her chapel. And at night in the early morning, you can go down and visit her. You can have this special time with St. Bernadette. So staying in monasteries and convents is a wonderful way to travel.
Colleen, you know, a lot of people go to church. A lot of people don't. Some people believe in God. Some people don't. If you're at all spiritual, regardless of how much you're into organized religion, it seems like you can inject a little bit of focus into the spiritual nature of travel, and it makes the travel itself a richer and more rewarding experience.
Thank you. And also, the true essence of pilgrimage is always centered in one's own heart, no matter where you travel.
I suppose your meditating skills are critical in that regard.
Yeah, it helps to practice stilling your mind and opening your heart to the blessings of the saints.
Best wishes with your work. We'll look forward to seeing your book coming out on India.
Oh, thanks so much.